It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 441 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I speak with the folks from Oneshi Press, including Lindsay G. and J.L. Draco, who are both co-founders. They have a Kickstarter going for Mr. Guy Zombie Hunter and Oneshi Press Comics Anthology No. 10 Origins. We talk about how these books came to be, as well as who Mr. Guy is, and the group of creators they've assembled to tell his story. We recorded this just before the Kickstarter began, and since that time I've supported the project. So once you listen to their fun interview, be sure to go to Kickstarter and look for Mr. Guy Zombie Hunter and Oneshi Press Comics Anthology No. 10 Origins. So I think you'll enjoy what they have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show.
Oneshi Press presents Mr. Guy Zombie Hunter and Oneshi Press Anthology 10 Origins. Mr. Guy Zombie Hunter is a delicious zombie apocalypse caper of ridiculous proportions. Our reluctant half-goblin hero, Mr. Guy, explores a smattering of zombie apocalypse tropes trying to find the cure. Each chapter is paired with a different illustrator, giving this ongoing story rich variations and flavor to keep the reader turning them zesty pages. We're kickstarting Act 1 of Mr. Guy from July 1st to the 31st, along with Oneshi Press's 10th comics anthology, Origins.
It's great to welcome back to the podcast Lindsay G. from Oneshi Press and J.L. Draco from a book that's coming out. In fact, the Kickstarter is starting very soon when we're recording, and by the time this hits, it will be well underway. It's called Mr. Guy Zombie Hunter. Lindsay, how are you?
I am great. Thank you so much for having me back, Wayne.
It's good to talk with you again. And J.L., this is our first time. How are you?
I'm great, and it's a pleasure to meet you, and it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks so much.
It's good to talk with you. Now, as we were talking a little bit before we started to record, you guys are old hands at Kickstarter right now. So let's talk a little bit about your history with Kickstarter before we dive into it. JL, maybe you want to talk about, I don't know, who wants to give the information on Kickstarters?
Well, it's been a team venture The whole way. This will be our sixth Kickstarter. So far, we're 5 for 5, getting full funding. So, you know, fingers crossed, knock on wood, toss some salt over your shoulder, every other superstitious thing you can do. I guess we started doing Kickstarters in, I don't actually remember if it was 2017 or 2018.
It might have been the end of 2017, right?
I'm not sure. But it was a few years ago.
Feels like eons ago.
We have learned so much over this time.
Yeah.
I think our first Kickstarter was for our first comic book, Pack, which is about vigilante dogs in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then I believe, Wayne, that I talked to you on our second Kickstarter, which was for the first issue of Tracy Queen.
Right.
Another of our comic book projects.
Right, I remember that.
Yeah.
Before we get too far in, why don't you give us an update on Tracy Queen?
Tracy Queen, we have the first two issues of the series out. There are eventually going to be 8, if all goes well. So we've got the first two out. The second one was just released a few months ago, I think in April. So we successfully kickstarted that in February to March of this year, right at the beginning of the pandemic. And it was quite a wild ride.
Oh, boy. How'd it go? I mean, obviously it was successful. I mean, was it different?
Yeah.
It was nerve-wracking.
it was a nerve-wracking time, and we were doing a nerve-wracking thing during a nerve-wracking time. It was something. We really struggled.
Actually, so Kickstarter gave us a 1 week extension, and it was during that 1 week extension that we went from like clearly not even being about to make our goal to like soaring past our goal. And I think it was just a matter of the timing. We were just in the right place at the right time. That 1 week extension made it happen when people were like, you know what? even though everything is scary right now, we still got to support creatives and we still need entertainment and we still, you know, like want to buy stuff. So like there's just at that moment where like the, I feel like the zeitgeist kind of changed its view on that, happened to be in that 1 week extension. And we just took off like a rocket in that last week and soared past our goal. Yeah. You know, it was great.
That's great, because what I hear, and I don't know if this is still true, but about a month ago, somebody was telling me that Kickstarter was looking for people to start Kickstarter projects because they actually slowed down for a while. People were afraid to do a Kickstarter while they thought people might not have so much money. They were literally contacting people, asking people to start Kickstarters. So I was fascinated by that. So you may be just in the right time for this to work really well for you. So I think that's pretty cool. So that's good. So
fingers crossed even more.
Yeah.
Now, before we dive in, people criticize me because I do this at the end. They rather than do it at the beginning. How do people get your product if they want to get stuff from Onishi Press?
Well, the easiest way is to go to our online store, which is at onishipress.com/store. And Onishi Press is spelled onishipress.com/store. We have a variety of indie comic books, including our anthologies, which collect short comics from diverse creators from all over the place. We've also got our standalone series, Tracy Queen and Pack, and soon, hopefully, Mr. Guy. And we have our ongoing fantasy illustrated novel series, Children of Gaia. We've also got a ton of great merch, like shirts and cups and mugs and wall art and stickers and all kinds of things all mixed up in there.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, it's all good stuff. I got to see a lot of it back on New York Comic Con a couple of years back when you and I talked first time. We were actually near each other on tables at that time. So that was pretty cool. So it was good stuff. So that'll help make people who like it sooner than later to get all that good information. Now let's dive into Mr. Guy Zombie Hunter. You sent me an email, and there was a paragraph that made me laugh, and I want to read it a little bit, and then we'll dive into your stuff about it. Mr. Guy Zombie Hunter is a zombie apocalypse caper of epic proportions. Our reluctant hero, Mr. Guy, a half-goblin ne'er-do-well with a wisecrack for every occasion, is infected with the ZMB virus. Boy, is that timely. Crap, she says. But then he discovers that his bite wound is haunted with a helpful ghost named Spooky, who comes with of superhuman strength. Using his needle powers, Mr. Guy is determined to cure himself, which means he'll probably have to save the world along the way. How tedious. So I think that, JL, you're probably the one to turn to as far as the story and stuff. Talk about where this whole thing came from.
So, I first came up with Mr. Guy, I was maybe like a freshman in high school, I think, you know, so like in the early 90s. And, you know, zombies have always been something I've loved since I was a little kid. And goblins are cool, you know, and I was always like, how cool would it be if there was like a zombie apocalypse not on Earth? Like, what about in a fantasy world, like where there's orcs and goblins and elves and humans, but not exclusively humans, you know? Like, I want to see a zombie apocalypse happen there. But I always felt like apocalypse feels like this future thing, right? So you want it to at least be modern, you know? So like, I'm like, all right, so dig it. There's this world where like goblins and orcs and trolls, you know, wear business suits and leisure clothes and, you know, like hang out in sports tees and whatever, you know? So it's a totally modern world, but it's fantasy. And Mr. Guy is just a goblin and he's stuck in it. But like something about his humor was just the way I pictured him. It was always kind of a little off. And as he developed, he just became more and more the like reluctant hero. Like, he's very much someone you might call Mr. Guy as an insult, like, all right there, Mr. Guy, you know. Mm-hmm. That's who he is, you know. He's Mr. Guy.
He's a bro.
he's a bro, you know, and, you know, no shade, like, but he's, you know, just doing his thing. He's worried about himself. The greater world is not his concern until he gets infected with something that's affecting the greater world. You know, now to save himself, he has to save us all. And that's the bummer of it, you know. And that just kind of like developed over years, naturally.
Mm-hmm. Now, another piece of information I always do towards the end, and people get mad at me. When is this Kickstarter going to conclude? Because when this posts, it'll already be underway, and we're very certain this is going to be doing well. But people always want to know, when's it going to end? So can you tell us, when is this Kickstarter going to conclude?
Sure. So this will be ending on the 31st of July.
Good. Do you know what time?
Probably evening our time. We're on mountain time.
Mountain time. We're launching at 5 and ending at 5?
Yeah, we're aiming to go for the entire month of July. So we're starting July 1st around 5 p.m. So we're going to end to aim, I believe, at 5 p.m. on the 31st.
Oh, cool. Okay. Because that makes a difference for some people. I don't, you know, because sometimes people are working till 5 and they want to know if they got to get to it before they get off of work, or if it's like some people do it right at midnight and then they can do it after they get off work, stuff like that. So we want to make sure people know. And of course, when they go to Kickstarter, they're going to want to look for Mr. Guy : Zombie Hunter.
Yes.
So I want to make sure people get that straight, because some people don't spell properly and stuff. So I want to make sure they get it right. So, you mentioned one thing I've got to ask. You said he's a half goblin. Is the other half something that's going to be something of a mystery, or is that something we can know? What's the deal with that?
We always refer to him as half goblin and never actually say what the other half is.
Okay.
There's a lot of that kind of humor in Mr. Guy where, like, we kind of leave certain things mysteries. I like to think of those sort of like nebulous plot points as aces up my sleeve for future issues, future books, specific like arcs where that nebulous plot point might come into play.
Mm-hmm. It's something that you can keep in reserve just in case you need it. If you paint your stuff into a corner at some point.
I always thought he was half human. Huh. Hmm. Well,
I never actually explicitly say that.
Yeah, I guess I just made that assumption because he's very attractive by most human standards. He's got like great posture. He seems tall. Like, these aren't particularly goblin-y traits.
You know, you're not the first person to call him attractive.
He is. All of the artists have drawn him that way so far.
I like it.
Well, one of the things he does, he's a dirty dancer.
Yes.
And they show in the illustration, I think you do the first chapter. You do the artwork in the first chapter, and you show them like that. So I got to kick. What's interesting, and we'll get a little more into this as we go along, there's interesting segments as happen. And each segment is drawn by a different artist. You do the first one, and then you've got a friend of mine, Walter Ossley, does the second one.
Yeah,
Walter is like everyone's friend. Everyone who talks is like, oh, Walter Ossley, I love him. Yes.
He's got Metal Shark Bro, Shiver Bureau,
yeah,
all those good things. He's done so many interesting things.
Hacksaw,
he's a great collaborator too. He likes to work with other people and stuff like that. So I always get a kick out of that. Now, the one thing I got to ask, of course, Mr. Guy is a comics fan. The very first time we see him, he's standing leaning up against a post and he's reading a comic book. And I love the name of it. It's called Kung Fu Catfish.
Yeah, that's his favorite comic.
I there's got to be a future for that somewhere down the line. If this ever goes along and you sort of, you know, run Mr. Guy his course, you might go in and follow up on this stuff and have a book on that. You just never know. If it takes off, that could happen.
Well, Dale is smirking.
So Kung Fu Catfish is actually the first like formal OC I ever came up with when I was 6 years old.
The OG
OC is my OG OC. And I always kind of resurrect him and I bring him about, and I've got big plans for Kung Fu Catfish.
Oh.
It's very silly. It's very meta. I kind of throw him into everything. And he's like a nice, like, connect the dots kind of character, because Nicola from Tracy Queen is also a Kung Fu Catfish fan. Mm-hmm. At one point in a story that has yet to come out, Cthulhu is revealed to have a Kung Fu Catfish tattoo on his shoulder. Oh. Yeah, I mean, Kung Fu Catfish is like everywhere. Like, he's just the comic that everyone loves.
All right. Now though, I mentioned you've got, and the thing that I have here that you made available to me as somebody's going to talk with you about it, there are four arcs in this, but I think there's going to be five altogether, right?
So there are four arcs in this art, in this act, and there are three acts altogether. So that's a total of 12 arcs that are part of book one. So, you know, eventually what we're kickstarting right now is act one, which is one third of book one.
But that's the four arcs so we know where we're going. Okay. With that. The interesting thing about this is at the beginning of the book, and I don't think we're revealing too much if we talk about the fact where we mentioned a little bit that he talks about his past jobs. Mm-hmm. You know, he used to be a dirty dancer one time. I said, then he supplemented by wrestling chickens. And then he painted hedges, which is kind of interesting. Has anybody ever tried that? Because I don't think the paint's going to stick too well. And then he does piloting mechs, which is the fourth one of the whole bunch. And he starts out in this book, he's getting a job. Now, there's a job open. He's I don't know. I don't want to describe it too much. I don't want to spoil something that we should. One of the great things at the beginning is that you do a very meta thing right there. You know, the guy who's hiring him says, well, I guess we could spare a few pages for a flashback. Oh, and then they flashback, they twist around to go back in the past, and we get to see all these good things. And the fun thing about it is each chapter at the beginning has a poster of one of those segments, one of those past. And like the second one, we get to see, or maybe it's the first one, we get to see him as, he says, Getcho Dirties danced. And it's got, you know, Mr. Guy Dirty Dancer and a poster for that. And of course, and then there's the damn drink, which is in the second one. So it's fun how you lay all these things out and then you follow them through, which I get, again, I think it's a lot of fun to do that. The names too got me. The first one is called Stupid Vermin. And you spell stupid like they do on the Adult Swim. It's S-T-O-O-P-I-D instead of S-T-U.
Right.
What's funny, everything else gets abbreviated. That gets extended. I always get that. And of course, you do the writing and the art on that one. The second one we also mentioned is Walter Ossley, and that's called A Damn Drink, which I just mentioned. The third one is called Muskrat City. I don't think that has to do with the Captain and Tennille song, but that's illustrated by Diana Camero. Probably that went all over people's heads. There was a song that they did called Muskrat Love. And they talk about it. So then the fourth one is called Resident Viral. And it's illustrated by J.C. Chase. And you have guest art by Sophia Murphy in there. And all the artwork's kind of fun. Honestly, the styles are kind of similar from one to the other. So you know, I kind of liked that. It was very consistent how it flowed from one story to another. I wanted to say that.
I feel like it's interesting because the styles flow really nicely. They're still unique enough that if you showed me one, I would know which artist it was. Mm-hmm. But really, it's like the sensibilities are just a little bit different in a way that I felt curating it was perfect for each arc. You know what I mean? Like, each artist's sensibilities come across in a way that just, it's like pairing wine with cheese, like aged cheeses and fine wines. You know what I mean? Like, that's how it feels to me. And yeah, it does flow really nicely. They're similar enough that it doesn't feel out of place, mm-hmm. but they're different enough that it feels like each one is encapsulated and mm-hmm. kind of put on its own pedestal and lit correctly, you know? Mm-hmm.
Now, there's one other thing I want to mention, too. In the email, you mentioned something that was kind of fun, that this book is called an artthology. And that's the way I seem to talk more and more on this podcast with people who are doing anthology books. And they're being, in, especially in indie circles, they're doing extremely well because it gives you a chance to tell shorter stories and it gets you to have more creators involved and they get exposure by doing this stuff. So I've never heard the term arthology before instead of anthology. So I thought that was, it says it's an experiment in storytelling with sequential art.
Yeah.
So talk about that. I mean, because the big companies are scared of anthologies. Every time they try to do that, it, although I have to say DC is doing these 80th anniversary anthology stuff with multiple stories and stuff in it. So maybe that's changed. But it used to be people were terrified of anthologies because they didn't think they would sell as well as a regular team. But talk about that, about the desire to go that route.
So, I mean, well, first, like, there's Dark Horse Presents was a great anthology that had a great run for a while, and that was a periodical anthology. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was kind of like following in the jet stream of, like, Heavy Metal magazine, which also was a periodical anthology model. And my first ever anthology was actually a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles anthology. And it was called Turtle Soup. And it was brilliant. Like, it was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but every, like, short comic was by a different creative team. And that, to me, was, like, what I wanted an anthology to be. And never since then have I seen one. And I think that's really, for me, the idea of the artthology, is that it's not an anthology in that it's a collection of all these completely different projects that have like a similar theme, but it's one project, this one IP being done by different people. Mm-hmm. So Turtle Soup was similar to that, except still these were different self-contained short stories, but at least it was the same Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in each one, just drawn by different people and drawn wildly different stylistically speaking, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was really cool, you know? But I was like, you know, what if it was like one story, like one narrative, and just each chapter was done in a different style, and the writer themselves were to like write stylistically different or thematically different for each chapter. You know, like I just wanted to take that and see how far that idea could be pushed. And it sounded a little weird. It was a little off, but like so far, everyone that's checked this out has been like, wow, this really works. And, you know, the feedback has just been super bright. You know, like I really feel great about the feedback.
The one thing we should mention, though, is that this is not necessarily a young child's book. It says on the front.
Good point.
Let me just say on the front, it says content warning, violence and gore. Go ahead and elaborate on that if you would.
So I like to imply when someone is injured or imply that something gory is happening and have it happen off screen. That's just like my style. But with Mr. Guy, I decided it would be funny to show the gore in an almost like cartoony kind of slapstick way. And I don't know, you know, how much you want me to talk about that. Like,
well, I mean, why you go that route as opposed to other routes? I mean, you know, cause obviously you can't say this is not going to be all ages, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing.
Right.
So why did you want to go that? Was it more suited to the storytelling you wanted to do?
I felt like it fit Mr. Guy's character more to just be a little crass and desensitized. Mm-hmm. I mean, the gore is not particularly realistic, but for example, you know, I'll have the sound effect actually like written in the sky in guts, you know, like the onomatopoeia spelled out in like gore. That I just thought felt right for the character. It just feels like that's his style. That's what we're kind of imbuing him with, is this like, he's just crass. He's desensitized. He's, you know, and so we wanted the slapstick to do its weight in conveying that.
Mm-hmm. And you know, if that's the story you want to tell, that's perfectly all right. You don't have to do all ages. I just bring that up because it seems like young adult books are really flying off the shelves these days. There's this thing called Dog Boy, and it sells like crazy. I've seen it, but I've never read. I've read other books, but that one doesn't appeal to me. It doesn't matter to me. The other kids, I mean, there's Amulet, which I really love, and there's a whole bunch of other ones that are young adult ones. And DC's doing, again, a whole bunch of young adult graphic novels and stuff that's going. So I, you know, you don't necessarily have to appeal to all ages to tell a good story. And, you know, the audience in comics, too, is starting to skew much older.
That's definitely true. I think you have a lot more people that have been reading comics for 50 years, you know. And that's cool. Like, the stories should be able to grow up with us as well. But also, you know, keeping in mind, like, this is going to be on the same table with Tracy Queen, which is definitely not for kids. I mean, it's about adult scenarios and dealing with, you know, adult issues. And so, you know, I just feel like most of our work at this point is going to be on the same shelf. We might as well, you know, just kind of roll with that.
Mm-hmm. I got to ask you too, because I'm going to call an experienced reader. I have been reading for several decades at this point. And for me, when I see something new and unusual, I am really drawn to it. And yours is that way. I feel there's a lot of really interesting and different things happening in this book. There are some things that happen that I've seen before, but, you know, you have a different way of doing them, which I really like. And so I think that's the question I have, though, knowing that there are a lot of people out there who have read a lot of comics and stuff. Is that a challenge to you, or does that help you write better knowing that you're trying to go places where other people haven't been?
Well, I would say that Mr. Guy actually depends on the fact that there are a lot of people who have read a lot of comics and taken in a lot of zombie fiction of different kinds, you know, movies, TV shows, comics, books. Mr. Guy is actually an exploration of zombies in pop culture. So I think I will defer to JL to talk about that a little bit more, because he's the one that created it, but it's very much in response to other zombie fiction.
Okay.
So I think a key point, and in fact, one of the fuels of the humor of Mr. Guy, is this idea that, like, you know, I was saying before, okay, so plot twist, this zombie apocalypse takes place on a modern fantasy world. The next part is, well, what version of the zombie apocalypse is it? Is it a retrovirus? Is it a curse? Is it, you know, like, did aliens do it? Is it GMOs? Is, you know, like, what exactly is this zombie apocalypse? And so in pop culture, what we have is all these subgenres of the zombie subgenre of horror, right? So it's like this hierarchy. Within horror, there's zombies. And within zombies, there's all these different versions of what causes the zombie apocalypse. So for Mr. Guy to save himself, he has to figure out how to cure the zombie apocalypse. Mm-hmm. And to figure out how to cure the zombie apocalypse, he has to figure out what's causing it. So he has to actually try and go through the checklist of, you know, well, was it created in a lab? Is it a natural virus? Is it a GMO? Is it a retrovirus? Is it a curse? Is it, aliens? You know, aliens? I'm not saying aliens, but... so, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the joy of it, is he goes through and explores all of these different sub-genres, you know.
And there's a lot of jokes in the book that maybe not even all readers will get, but anyone who really loves zombies will get a lot of them, at least. JL really went pretty deep into zombie sort of lore for the jokes and gags in this book.
Mm-hmm. There's a wonderful sequence, and I'm going to talk about this character next. He gets a companion along the way by the name of Spooky. And at one point, he's actually talking with them, and they're talking about curing zombies. And he says, if we cured it, I'd be free of this expository, dialogue-ridden specter bubble, which made me laugh. And I read that. I went, that, you know, that's an interesting description of the character, which I want to talk about a little bit. But that's a funny way to – you know, self-awareness to me is always enjoyable when I read stuff. When people are aware of themselves and the good and the bad, and they really see that. And so that was hilarious to me that this character actually was conscious. And this is on the first page that we see him. He's already conscious of the kind of things he does, which I found very entertaining. And he's very much he's there to be kind of the outsider, the gadfly for Mr. Guy, which I really like. And he's called Spooky. Now, of course, I want to know more about Spooky that you can tell us. Don't spoil stuff, but tell us what we should know about Spooky.
Well, Spooky is cursed to be Mr. Guy's sidekick. Also, Mr. Guy is cursed to have Spooky as a sidekick. So they're kind of each other's co-curses. And that's also part of this greater story that they both have to discover. Part of the thing with Spooky is, you know, there's this kind of like deus ex machina, like convenient plot exposition. Whatever works for the plot, Spooky has the ability to know. But whatever would spoil the plot, he can't know. Mm. So like his powers are based on not spoiling the plot, or at least his limitations. And that is kind of a deconstruction of something that we see a lot in actual storytelling that isn't self-aware. Mm-hmm. Is when, you know, side characters have the ability to know anything except for what would save the day. You know, like, they clearly can't know what would spoil the plot, but they can know everything else. So it's kind of like a little bit of like a wry, you know, ribbing to that kind of storytelling, which also I'm guilty of myself. So it's also ribbing myself, you know, but it's done lovingly, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to get back to that. There's something that you reminded me of something I wanted to ask. Well, let me do it before we get to the thing. I noticed that Mr. Guy, in some ways, when I looked at your picture on Facebook, there's some similarities. Is Mr. Guy designed based on you?
He's a part of me that I would never let out of the box. Like, he is 100% self-interested. And I'm the kind of person that, I mean, I will help people to the point where other people are like, JL, you need to stop and take care of yourself. You need to stop doing this right now. You know what I mean? Like, I can't imagine living a life that is completely like self-centered. But there's a part of me that's like fascinated with that concept. Mm-hmm. So he's like a part of me that kind of explores what that would be like. Mm-hmm. So it's like a vicarious, like, nega world version of me. Like, you know, he's the one of, he's the version of me with the mustache and the eye patch, you know?
Okay. Well, the reason why I asked that, because when I looked at the picture of you on Facebook, you have green skin and pointy ears like Mr. Guy does. And I thought, it made me think, wait a second, is there something going on here that we need to know a little bit more about? But, you know, I think you're doing that just to kind of do a promotional thing. Well,
yeah. Oh, crap, he's on to us.
I'm actually a half goblin. I won't tell you what that is, though.
That's what I thought. Okay, back to Spooky for a second. Talk to me about the design of Spooky. Spooky is, and of course, this is an audio podcast, so I can't really show a visual. I'll try to get it in the banner. But he's a skull, or at least the top part of the skull, down to the upper teeth. Mm-hmm. And he floats in a green cloud, interestingly, which is a little different than the one. Talk about designing him and stuff, because you, like, for example, when he's saying that remark about that he's an expository dialogue red inspector bubble, his eyes kind of close a little bit to make it look like he's laughing at himself with that. Talk about the design of him and why you made the choices you did with Spooky.
So, again, this goes back to Turtle Soup, which was also my introduction to Stan Sakai's work with Yosagi Ojimbo. And I love Yosagi Ojimbo. Like, as a kid, I just could not get enough. You know, back in, like, the 80s and 90s, like, Yosagi Ojimbo was everything to me. And a lot of times what Stan would do is when a character perishes, he would indicate their having, you know, left the mortal coil by having a little, like, instead of a thought bubble, it would be like a thought bubble, but with a skull in it, you know, to be like, oh, this character is dead now. And I just thought that was like so much fun and so brilliant. And honestly, I just wanted that thought bubble to be a character. Like, I wanted that to, like, that's what I thought of as ghosts. I was like, yes, that's such a wonderful, cute way of like making a ghost. So then, you know, that thought kind of evolved and diverged from what originally sparked joy there. And I was like, I'm keeping this, you know, I can't throw that out. I got to do something with it. And it just worked its way into Mr. Guy. And again, that was probably within like a 10-year span, because Mr. Guy, I had first started designing in the early mid-90s, you know? So I think like that's where it came from. And then since then, it just continued to evolve. And the idea that he's like stuck in this little bubble that's attached to a bite mark in Mr. Guy's arm. And Mr. Guy is totally, again, he's Mr. Guy, you know? So like Spooky's just going to be a little sassy, a little like bummed, a little like, ugh, you know, like it's tiring to be Mr. Guy's sidekick all the time, you know?
Spooky's a little bit of an intellectual, I would say. And Mr. Sure. Guy definitely is not.
Definitely not.
There's a sequence in there that I have to laugh. I don't think it'll spoil stuff, where he's somewhere and he's talking about that it's not like a such and such a store. And he says it's more like a convenience store, with a big grin on his face. And Spooky's eyes go up to the top of his head and goes, unfollow. Yeah. Which I got a kick out of, you know, very, you know, Facebooky kind of terminology. He's kind of the socially aware, right, of the two of them.
Canceled.
So I got, yeah. So I got a kick out of him. I was interested that they, depending on the artist, they portray him a little differently, yeah, one to the other. And I thought that was interesting. Were you surprised when people, like, you must have given the artist like the scripts, and then when the artwork came back, were you interested to see how differently each person portrayed, like, say, Mr. Guy and Spooky?
Oh, I was giddy with excitement. I mean, you know, these are all artists that we've worked with before and whose work we love. You know, they've worked on anthologies with us in the past. And, you know, I knew that I would love it. So I basically just showed them all of my artwork of Mr. Guy and gave them the script and said, okay, do this, but in your style. And when we got it back, I mean, each time it was like, I don't even know, like all the birthdays at once, you know?
Mm. Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Now there's 52 pages in the book that I got to see. And I imagine there's going to be some altering as we go along. And I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the very end of the book. There is, you talk about meta stuff. Yeah. Get to the end of the book, and I don't know, some part of me doesn't want to spoil it, because I was happily surprised by it. But let's just say there's a big meta thing happens at the very end of the book. If you get to, there's several posters and artwork drawings and stuff like that. Don't stop. Keep going when you get to those, because there's a wonderful meta piece at the very end of the book. And you actually have some of the pages drawn into well, the stuff that's in there, where we actually get to see some of the comic in there, which I got to, and there's a great joke at the end, the very last thing we see that made me laugh. So I got a huge kick out of it. So there's a wonderful bit. Don't stop reading when you get to the end of what appears, you get to the place where it appears as the end. You keep going. It's like a Marvel movie, you know, you want to hang around after the credits so that you can get to see this stuff. And that's what this is kind of. It's a great fun little bit. There's a lot of fun going into this book, and it really is enjoyable. Now, the question I've got, though, you know, you talked about the fact that there's multiple sequences for this. Do you know what you basically, you've got this book, you know, there's still some parts that yet to come in, but you know, it won't be too long after the Kickstarter's done that you'll be, you know, ready to send this out. Is this going to be printed? Are you going to do paper copies? Are you going to do digital? How are you going to do that?
Oh yeah. So, before the Kickstarter even ends, this will be ready to send to the printer so that as soon as the Kickstarter money goes to our account, we hit send and the printer prints it. Our printer is already aware of this. You know, I mean, our turnaround times are pretty amazingly fast. The one thing that we have to wait for is we send out surveys so that we can thank our backers, and we let them tell us what name they want to be thanked as. Some people don't want to use their given name, or, you know, some people want to do it in someone else's name, their friend or their neighbor or whatever, you know. So we always have to wait for those surveys to come back. But as soon as those surveys come back, we put all those names in the book and just send it right out and it's printed.
Cool. So one thing we haven't asked is, do you know what the goal is going to be, the fundraising goal?
Yeah. So that is 10 grand. And that is to cover paying the artists and paying the printing for this book. And also, we actually haven't said this yet, but we're also doing our 10th anthology along with Mr. Guy, the artology. Mm-hmm. So anthology 10 has, well, Ava, Lindsay, I've been talking a lot. You want to tell them about anthology 10?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So the anthology series is kind of actually how we came upon all of the artists that ended up working on Mr. Guy. We've been making comics anthologies, for, I don't know, maybe about 3 years now. This is going to be our 10th one. And it features, I believe, 14 short comics and art by, it's well over 24 creators. I don't remember the exact number. So up until now, we had been basically printing the anthologies more or less out of pocket, because we really want to work with a lot of different creators and we want to tell these stories and we love doing it. But because there is, like you said earlier, kind of this mystique around anthologies where people are kind of afraid to touch them, like retailers won't go near them. You know, big comic book companies don't want anything to do with them. We've had a harder time than we expected making the money back. So this time we said, hey, we're going to be funding Mr. Guy. We want it to be a really big Kickstarter. Why don't we fund both books with one Kickstarter? So putting these two things together, we're going to be aiming for $10,000 goal. So once again, fingers crossed, knock on wood, salt over the shoulder. I don't know, turn around in circles a bunch of times, whatever else you do. It's going to be our biggest Kickstarter goal so far. So we are really excited and also, you know, a little healthily nervous, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Well, you wouldn't be healthy if you weren't nervous going into this. People go up to, I've seen people go up there and say, hey, give me $10,000 and I'll start on a comic book. Mm. And I'm like, and everybody goes, what? What's to stop you from taking the $10,000 and going off to the islands or something like that?
Right.
You know? So the good thing is I have proof right in front of my eyes that you guys have been working hard on this good stuff and making it very successfully done. I think it's really going to be fun for people to read. I think it's going to be a great, great story. Things are going to really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. And so sometimes I read books that are not so much fun. So it was nice to get into a more fun book. You know, because I tend to be drawn to, and this is true of zombie books too. Zombie books tend to be darker, if there's any humor at all. This is a lot more, if nothing else, smile humor, and I laughed out loud at parts of it. But there's still a serious story going on. It's not necessarily a full humor book. There's a lot of good things. It's got that nice balance that is just right. It's like a real things. You know, in our real lives, we joke and do stuff like that too. And it's always interesting to me that some people don't want to, if somebody tells a joke in a comic, oh no, that's a funny book. We can't have that. And then, but yet in real life, that's what we do all the time. So I like it when, like your book, there's dry humor, there's laugh out loud stuff, there's all different kinds of things going on that makes it an entertaining read. And I think it's going to go over real well. I don't think you're going to have trouble getting the 10,000. I think it's going to work.
Wow. I like the sound of that.
So thank you.
About to do that.
You know, now, honestly, just hearing that you laughed out loud at parts and particularly hearing which parts you pointed out that you really liked, like, mm-hmm. it's I might be floating around for days after this. You know, like.
Well, I think you're going to hear a lot of that. I don't think I'm going to be the only one saying that. I think there's going to be a lot of people really going to enjoy it. So I think it's going to be great. So it's good. Now, the question I wanted to ask, of course, you've got this is like the first arc. You said there's several arcs. How far are you like working? Obviously, you've gotten a good deal ahead on this one. You're already working on the second arc?
So this is arcs 1 through 4. And I already have up to arc 12 written. Wow. So that's all together going to be book one, the big, you know, compendium. And then I have ideas for book two, but I'm keeping those kind of loose. So right now, the very next issue, which will be act two, mm-hmm. arcs 5 through 8. Those are pretty much done writing. I have a few ideas of what artists I want to pair with which arcs. But act three is still kind of loose. A lot of the writing there is kind of loose. I need to do a couple more passes, but I want to leave myself that ability to see what people are responding to the most in this when they get it, to then, you know, go back and retweak the next one a little bit before pulling the trigger on it. And then, you know, after that one is out in the world, still have a little bit of time to tweak the third one before, you know, getting that out.
Cool. Well, it's great that you've worked that far ahead, because some people, you know, I always thought that Mark Waid, when he wrote stuff, he would apparently write himself in the corner, but I thought he knows how he's getting out of it. There's no problem with that. But then when I interviewed him, I actually said that to him. He says, "Oh no, I don't do that at all." And I sit and write it, and my editor and I rewrite in the corner, and then we come back a couple weeks later and say, "How are we going to get out of this?" And I was like, "Really?" He says, "Oh," he says, I hope I didn't disappoint you with that." He goes, "But I thought that's kind of funny, you know, that I was so sure he had. There's only way he could do this if he knew how he was going to do it, but that wasn't the case with that." But I noticed something I got to mention in here, in one, the latter story, when Mr. Guy ends up jumping into a thing of some liquid and stuff. I noticed that outside, you were talking about the turtles. There's what appears to be, let's just say, it looks like a radioactive tube with stuff on it. And around the tube, what are there? but four turtles, a rat, and a piece of pizza. And that made me laugh. I said, that was one of the ones. I said, okay. I said, I got that joke. That's a great little thing to have. I thought that was a great thing. I love – see, in-jokes like that are great fun for those of us who get them. Somebody looking at that wouldn't know what the heck that was, and that would be fine with them. But those of us who get the in-joke enjoy that kind of stuff, and I think that's a great way to do that.
Wonderful. So
that's super turtle cool. Power.
Yeah, I like that great stuff. So, okay, so what we got is this is Mr. Guy and Zombie – let me make sure I get it exactly right. Mr. Guy, Zombie Hunter – and Jail Draco, and of course Lindsay G, are involved with it. And go to Kickstarter and don't let them have the daily heart attack. Let's get to this all done as soon as possible so that they can actually look at it and say, okay, now we can worry about stretch goals. You don't have to worry about raising the money so much. And I think that's always a good way. I love it when a Kickstarter goes into the stretch goals, because then we get to see all the really good things that you probably would love to do. So I like that. So Lindsay, let me ask you, is there any other things that Onesi Press is doing? I'm sure this is going to be a big success. So I think Mr. Guy Zombie Hunter is going to take off. Other things that you guys are doing that we should be aware of?
We've always got a lineup of things coming. This year, we actually had a really, really busy schedule planned. We were going to try to put out 4 books. And then, you know, things started happening. 2020 has been occurring. And so we've scaled back a little bit. So at this point, our sort of schedule of when everything is happening is a little bit more up in the air. So I don't want to make any grand declarations, but in the next year or so, you can look for Mr. Guy #1. We're going to be working on Pack #3. we'll be working on Tracy Queen number 3. And we're also going to have a collection of comics by Brendan Rowe, who is a writer who we've worked with on multiple anthologies. I believe we're looking to collect 4 or 5 of his short comics into one volume, probably next spring. So we're really excited about that. We haven't actually done a collection like that yet, but we have been wanting to. Sort of like the next stage of Oneshi Press is starting to do standalone issues and or volumes of other people's work. So I think that's all we've got on the docket for now.
I think what we're planning on doing is with each anthology, like Anthology 11 and 12, have a different single issue project come out. Like Lindsay was saying, the next issue of Pack or the next issue of Tracy Queen or the Brendan Rowe anthology will come with one of our Oneshi Press comics anthologies. So if this works out well, which we're assuming it will, I think we've received great feedback so far. So as long as this Kickstarter goes well, this might be the model for our future Kickstarters. Of course, if somebody were to say right now, hey, JL and Lindsay, I love what you guys are doing. You guys are amazing. Here's $100,000. We have at least 12 projects we could pull the trigger on, including the rest of Tracy Queen, the rest of Pack, the rest of Mr. Guy, and several Children of Gaia stories that we have all the work done for conceptually. We just have to space it out for funding purposes, really.
Right. Well, and in time.
Well,
keep getting the actual work
done. Hiring people, you know.
Well, we'll keep the ear to the ground. Maybe somebody like that is out there would like to step forward. That would they wouldn't turn that down.
Are you out there?
Now that leads to another question, of course. If we want to follow your guys' stuff, how do we do that on social media?
We are at Oneshi Press on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us on any of those by typing in Oneshi Press. We also have our website, oneshipress.com. There's also MrGuyComic.com, where we're going to be posting some interviews with the creators over the next few weeks. There's a lot of art up there and just more information on that project. And there's a lot of information on our anthologies also at oneshipress.com.
Also, in the footer of oneshipress.com, you can find links to all of our socials and all that stuff.
Right.
Okay. Well, you guys are doing wonderful stuff, and I wish you continued success. I think you guys have been doing great so far, and granted on your successful Kickstarter, I'm very optimistic this is going to turn out super well for you guys, and we're going to get to move forward and do a lot more of these good things. I mean, I think you guys are doing great stuff, and I just think that all I can do is encourage you to keep it up because, man, you're doing the kind of stuff that I enjoy reading, and I love that wonderfully balanced storytelling that is so much fun to read and so enjoyable. So all I can say is keep it up, and you guys get out there and support Mr. Guy Zombie Hunter. It's out on Kickstarter right now. So let's get that goal and get into stretch goals.
All right.
I can't thank you enough, Wayne. You're awesome. Thank you so much.
And thanks for being a close reader. You made a lot of great observations.
In my day.
I always get a kick because when I interview people, I always want to, I like to ask good questions, and that's why I always ask people, send me stuff. There was a guy for an image book, and I won't say which one. I had asked a bunch of questions, and he was surprised, at the questions I did. I saw him in New York when he realized who it was. He said, oh, it's you. Oh, you asked all those wonderful questions. Yeah. And I said, well, yeah, that's why I get the copies ahead so I can actually kind of try to help people get more out of the book when they get a hold of it. That's my goal. And so that's what I do. So yeah, I like to ask good questions. You guys are fertile ground for good questions. So I think that's
well, you are the ideal reader for us because we love packing in little inside jokes and meta references. It's like our favorite thing to do. Mm-hmm. So we really appreciate when people notice those little details.
Yeah. People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's a wrap for this episode. If this weekend is a holiday one for you, have a great time. And even if it isn't, we'll see you next week. So until then, keep reading your comics.